The following episode of Unspoken Words was recorded at Baba Hogg's on Tuesday, October 27th, 2009. The word humor has many meanings. One of them describes an outdated medical practice where the humors refer to the fluids of the body. An illness could be understood through interpreting these bodily fluids, their color, viscosity, and so on. Back in the days, it was thought that the body could fill up with too much humor, so the easiest thing to do was to let some out, drain the body of its humor, if you will. And this week, that's exactly what Unspoken Words, the series that reflects on a single word and what a single word can inspire, intends to do. What with sea level rise and the amount of rain lately, the world seems to be filling up with fluid, so it's time to open the taps, bleed off some of the pressure, and try to let the world's excessive humors drain harmlessly away. Humor also refers to comedy, mirth, laughter. It transcends the body and all its humorous fluids, and in doing so, interrupts, ever so briefly, our perception of space and time, bringing us more closely into that impossible moment of now. Humor is about as close as we can get to whatever this thing we call now is. Why is the Buddha always smiling? Because now is not the past or the future, but is in fact that which is always already those self-same things. A kind of euphoric state of being, a oneness in the moment. Just as the now we are in is no longer precisely now anymore in the context of time, that instant is now, was. We can only describe it as a particular now, then, in the past. But now doesn't always work like that, what with this being a multidimensional quantum universe and everything. The problem with describing now have been highlighted recently by the chronic faults and problems scientists are having with the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland. They're trying to have a good look round for Higgs boson, the God particle, a kind of prehistoric particle that no longer exists, but which once did, so they say, when the universe began. Just imagine being at that now, way back then. Anyway, there's suggestions that this complex piece of particle-smashing kit may have, in a future dimension, seen some trouble coming with recreating the boson particle and somehow sabotaged itself in our time from somewhere in the future, so that it can't find the flipping Higgins thing in our particular present now, a kind of quantum theory-based Alzheimer's. Honey! Honey! Have you seen my God particle anywhere? For instance, I can predict that I will shortly ask everyone, on a count of three, to say now. And by doing that, I myself am laying down a marker in the future towards which we are all hurtling at the speed of time. Although, to be fair, we are actually hurtling toward an infinite number of futures simultaneously. Anyway, let's just see if we can arrive at the particular future I have just predicted. One, two, three.
Now.
Lovely. That was the time machine resetting itself. But as you can see, we're already racing away from that point at precisely the same speed as we came across it, because you can't just get off the time bus. Or, as someone might say in any number of infinite other futures, shk, you can't change the laws of physics, Captain! Shk! So we can only share that unifying instant in the past tense. How was it for you? How was that now, then, trying to catch sight of that marker we left floating in the sea of time somewhere in our wake? The young Albert Einstein used to take the tram to work every day, and as he watched the town clock tower receding behind him on his daily commute, Einstein would imagine himself traveling through time and space, accelerating toward the speed of light, not only thinking about how much faster he would get to work, but realizing that as he approached the speed of light, then the light from the clock tower, which told him the time, would take longer and longer to reach him, so that, at the speed of light, not only would it stay the same time all day at the office, and who hasn't had that feeling, but it would remain the same time in relation to wherever he traveled at the speed of light too. Naturally, it would be impossible to slow down in time to get off the tram at his stop, because he would be halfway across the universe by the time he was supposed to be at work. Einstein, what time do you call this?
Sorry, sir, I missed my stop again.
Oh, come on, not that old chestnut. Do you think I was born yesterday? Well,
actually, that's an interesting point. I've just been calculating with the speed of light, and I think it may be the case that all motion is relative and light has a constant velocity, which means we must regard space-time as a four-dimensional continuum.
Shut up there, will you, Einstein? Just go and serve some customers. And get yourself a watch, will you? To return to comedy, what is so funny about a clown? Equally, why are the tears of a clown such a powerful metaphor for sadness? In the original version of A Star is Born, one of those classic 50s musical dramas, there's a scene where Judy Garland, the star being born, not, it should be said, in quite the same way we understand a real star being born, like the sun, a cosmic powerhouse of such incalculable mass it continually consumes itself in nuclear fissile combustion, generating not only light and heat, but, like an atomic factory, manufacturing and spitting out the basic chemical elements that comprise all matter, us, and the world around us. The very same world, in fact, in which we can watch the film A Star is Born, in which Judy Garland plays the person who comes from nowhere to be a Hollywood star, whose husband, played by James Mason, is also a star, but in his case a waning one, a kind of red giant of a star in the latter phase of its life, bloating out and shining brighter as it loses its energy, slowly imploding throughout the film under the weight of his own massive gravity and addiction to alcohol. We see him transforming into a kind of Hollywood black hole of obscurity, just as Judy Garland's star is rising. So, faced with the angst and trouble of her love life imploding around her, we, the audience, are by her side in her trailer dressing room as she dons, of all things, and I apologize for the length of time it's taken me to get to the relevant point in this case, she dons a clown costume and is about to go on stage when she hears the bad news about James falling off the rails. We see her in full clown makeup, reflected in the mirror. We see behind the clown mask of comedy her tears. In an instant, she must be on set. We follow her in one continuous shot to the soundstage from the pain of her solitude and out into the public eye, because the show must go on, especially if it's a movie. And the clown, utterly unmasked by the camera's eye in the dressing room, walks onto the stage and, with the word action, is transformed and loved by the camera and us once again, creating the moment of now, the smile, the song, the audience's desire, a new dawn, a new day, no more sorrow, no more pain. But outside of Hollywood, it's worth remembering, as far as the pursuit of happiness goes, it's only the pursuit itself which is guaranteed. Slapstick, one-liners, puns, sarcasm, pies in the face, fits of laughter until your belly splits, or you have to rush off to the toilet. No matter what, comedy unmasks, reveals both mystery and the fragility of logic. A joke can be an indescribable moment or a book-length extravaganza focused on the stupidity of how we act, how we think, and whatever else we do. Jokes are a cerebral form of virus, orbiting around the very roots of language itself. Freud looked into humor, investigating the nexus of the savage breast, our self egos, ids, all lined up in slips and fault lines. Comedy can be constructed from the flimsiest of foundations, like birthplaces, sexual preferences, linguistic snags, or it can ooze like one of those humors through the hairline cracks in the structure of any civilization, sparking out from the crossed paths of those infinite wires that make up the way our brains like to work, analyzing everything at once, even as we move, run, drive, fly, rocket our way straight up, leaving the planet at escape velocity. Whoosh! Hey, close that door. What are you brought up in a barn? Shk. Laughter is a great escape, and as it whooshes out in guffaws, kerfuffles, sniggers, snorts, bellows, shoulders shuddering helplessness, I, for one, instantly forget how the joke I've just been told went. I get this sudden amnesia of humor occurring when I stop laughing, and although I know I've been infected by the damn thing, I can't pass it on. I'm an impotent carrier who can only listen mutely to the same joke years later and pretend that, oh no, I hadn't heard that one before. Or, yeah, I'm somewhere, but never, never told so well. Oh, that was fantastic. Really. Do you do that for a living? Can I see you live somewhere? Everybody is supposed to be happy. Say cheese. Ever wonder how many billions of frozen, utterly untrue smiles have been recorded, printed, uploaded, and placed in the archives of family histories ever since the invention of photography? For example, I don't know how many people say they hate Christmas or other family gatherings and only do it out of a sense of obligation or maybe to pick up a check. But what kind of life is that? It's a joke, which is the most useful thing about life generally. It provides all the raw material necessary for a good laugh. The musings of the human mind can get stuck in some of the greatest psychological crevices imaginable, and we walk through life, avoiding the cracks, waiting for a decent satirist to come along and remind us why the whole thing is hilarious, and of course, three come by at once. Take my wife, please.
I did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky.
Dope! I had this sentimental reminiscence recently about my English teacher in seventh grade, Miss McDonald. Plainly, she hated being there and treated the classroom like it was her living room, which was charming in its own way, until as we turned our heads down to write or to read some important passage of Shakespeare, she started picking her nose, rolling the snot into little balls and flicking it out from behind the fortress of her desk. Oblivious to both her snot's trajectory and our 30-odd juvenile presences in the firing line. Aside from realizing then that everyone is a potential snot target, another kind of understanding occurred for me around the same time during my middle teen years. This was when job prospects opened up beyond delivering the local paper to your neighbors. This was a time when you got promoted from being a lowly wolf cub, dib 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 dob dob dob, and the obligatory child soldier uniform of shorts, knee socks, cap, a bit like kids have to wear to school today, in fact, although they don't have to pretend to be a pack of wolves and squat in circles singing made-up chants in homage to Baden Powell and his questionable Scott of the Antarctic outdoor survival skills. Obviously, we've moved on. I mean, it's not like Ray Mears is the worldwide godhead of packs of children and teens pretending to be, I don't know, pods of killer whales or something. The old idea of the humors of our bodies, the fluid and its flows, currents, hydraulics, is generally not such a bad way of looking at what it is to be human, if only in a very mechanical way. What is funny is why we think anything is funny in the first place. What is the trigger for humor? Comedy, the reflex response of laughter to this matter of fact, this does that, for each and every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, everything has a purpose in the great scheme of things, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off, master plan sort of way of thinking about reality and our being in it. Without taking the piss, we would be stuck in a warped, Brazil-like Matrix trilogy alien spaceship Total Recall of a Terminator, War of the World, Lost in Space, The Day After Tomorrow kind of quest for fire civilization, continually seeking escapism in technology and idolizing the future because there's no time to contemplate, connect, or act upon the very nowness of being in the first place. If not, that is, for humor and the complex inanities and subversions of logical progressions that release us from our addiction to perceiving the world in a certain rational, all-too-serious way. So, thank you for humoring me and my bodily fluids, which have been building up all the while. My name is Mac Dunlop, and thanks for listening. Bye for now.